This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Arnold terminated, Bloomberg coronated, and other election lessons, plus France in chaos, big bad oil, and bye-bye, Judy Miller. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of the Santa Monica studio and the political spectrum is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist and editor of the new online publication TruthDig.com. On the right, as always, from Washington is Tony Blankley, editorial page editor and columnist for the Washington Times and author of The West's Last Chance, Will We Win the Clash of Civilizations? Arianna Huffington is away today. Obviously a big week. Off-year, it's sort of an off-year election, 2005, but among the highlights was Arnold Schwarzenegger in California, who had staked much of his reputation and energy of his administration on four big initiatives, generated headlines saying no, 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 and no, all of them going down to defeat. Mike Bloomberg winning a very big reelection in New York City. Mark Warner's lieutenant governor in Virginia. Mr. Kane winning what was considered an important victory for Democrats in Virginia. There's a lot going on. Tony Blankley, why don't I start with you? What interested you most from this week in the election? Are Republicans now shaking and quaking because they think this is the harbinger, if that's a harbinger, of a bad 2006 for them? What do you make of it?
Yes. I think the last one, the answer would be yes. They're in a slow despond, turning to panic. But the Virginia election, I think, is pretty clear evidence of a negative Bush effect on Republican votes. Not so much necessarily the top of the ticket, although I think the 5 or 6 point spread there was decidedly more than had been shown prior to the election day, and I think that shows probably a lower Republican turnout. But down ticket, lieutenant governor, attorney general races that should have been won were where the Republicans were ahead by upwards of 10 points in some cases, winning by a point or two and one too close to call for about 40 hours. That clearly was not related to those campaigns, but rather particularly to the mood. Now, Virginia has a weird history. Since the 1970s, it has never elected a governor of the sitting White House party. So some Republicans take some solace from that. I think that's really more a statistical fluke. The mood in Washington amongst professional Republicans is deep concern that Bush and his current low ratings and image in the country is going to adversely affect Republicans. And you see that not only in the mutterings, but in the way in which Congress is behaving, Republicans, in the last few days. So, yes, I don't think you can spin this as just a benign result. Republicans are worried.
Robert Scheer, I know Bob was here sort of cheering, in silent cheer as we heard about Republicans' worry and your very precise phrase, deep concern. Bob, what do you make of election 05?
Well, I'm hoping it's a good day for moderate Republicans. After all, Bloomberg showed that if you have a reasonable position, which he does, I probably would have voted for him myself.
Isn't he really a Democrat? Well, he just became a Republican, if people remember, a year before, so because that was the only practical way to get elected?
By today's standard, Dwight Eisenhower was certainly a Democrat. Maybe even Richard Nixon was a Democrat, certainly on domestic issues and where he believed in the guaranteed annual income. So I'm hoping that, I don't think the seat is in partisan terms. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger should have been a moderate Republican. He should have been in that mold. He betrayed that in this go-around in California. What was particularly obscene is he endorsed an anti-choice initiative in the crudest way, only to get his right-wing base to the polls. And that was one in which he said, I wouldn't want my daughter ripped out of a school and taken to an abortion clinic, which, of course, has nothing to do with this initiative. No one's ripping anyone out of a school. The thing was put on the ballot for cynical reasons to get what they call their base, which is a pretty sorry description of what used to be the Republican Party. It seems to me Schwarzenegger betrayed a chance, first of all, in not signing off on the gay marriage thing, vetoing it, where he could have really gone down as a major figure, courageous figure. But we all know in his heart he's a moderate and doesn't buy into this stuff, but he betrayed it, and the voters turned him out. And despite the support, by the way, of all seven major dailies in the state for one or another of his initiatives, every single one of them went down. It was a great victory for the nurses more than anyone else.
Well, let's talk for a second about a couple of these things. But one thing that interested me from the Virginia race, and E.J. Dionne, the Washington Post columnist, has commented on this, was that – and I'm just blanking on Kane's first name. Tony, remind me, the new governor-elect of Virginia.
I'm trying to forget.
Tom?
It's Tom. Not sure.
But not the old
Tim.
Tim Kaine, yes. Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine.
Was that he,
we just destroyed our pundits' credentials.
That's all right. We're dealing with the big issues, and then we fit people into them as they serve our purposes. But the point was that he faced very serious attacks for being soft on the death penalty, which often is used by death penalty advocates as a kind of highly symbolic and very potent issue. And at least E.J. Dionne, watching this evolve, said that the way that Kaine parried this, using it as an occasion to talk about why his faith didn't let him support the death penalty, and that was still not inconsistent with being tough on crime. The question is, are there lessons there for Democrats in the way that campaign worked? Mark Warner, the current governor, who feels vindicated by his sort of handpicked successor getting the nod, said this is showing that it's about people want to hear about, health care, fiscal responsibility, education, the stuff that governors actually do and don't want to be distracted by these sideshows like the death penalty and like some of these things. Tony, yes or no? Any broader lessons for that in terms of the actual political style and political substance?
No. look, one can't on the one hand say this election was determined largely by national Bush atmospherics, and on the other hand look for sort of cherry-pick examples to support your theories of politics on the local level. If you get into a discussion of the campaign as a campaign as opposed to a victim of a national political mood, then you can make all sorts of arguments. Kilgore ran a mediocre campaign. He had a hillbilly accent that didn't play well in burgeoning Northern Virginia. He didn't come out for repeal of the previous administration's tax increases, so that he gave a halting position on tax cuts. You can look at a lot of things, but my sense is that Kilgore was moving towards about a 3 to 5 point victory, based just generally on the two candidates and the issue sets. And then as Bush started sinking, Kilgore started sinking. So it was probably something to a close to a slightly Kilgore advantage. And on election day with the Bush atmospherics, Kilgore lost by 6 points. So I think it was more a national one. But you can always try to theorize. But the principles that E.J. was referring to, of course, are principles he'd love to see Democrats champion. So I think maybe there was a little bit of wishful thinking, which all of us pundits sometimes indulge in.
Yeah, I'd be shocked.
And E.J.'s a wonderful guy.
I'd be shocked to hear that could happen. On California, an interesting question now is you have this strange situation, kind of almost nationally in a state like California, where Bush, if there were a parliamentary system, there'd be a vote of no confidence, but Bush still has sort of 3 years to go. Arnold is sort of at the same situation, sort of dead in the water after placing so much of his effort on these initiatives. And I I was not for the recall, not because I was a Gray Davis lover, but because I thought it was just sort of a crazy thing. But when Arnold won, I was actually hopeful because, I guess like Bob, I hope that between his own clear moderate stance and the role that he and Maria could play together as a kind of third way-ish force, that there would be a chance to actually get serious about some of these problems. But I do say it's been so disappointing. And I guess the question is, can he do a kind of brand relaunch? Because a lot of what ended up happening, I don't know if it was just he got bad advice or had bad instincts, but take the teacher initiative that he did here, where the whole teaching career clearly needs reform in a way that would raise the salary trajectory and path for people, especially to attract them to teach in the toughest high poverty schools. And yet But in exchange for that kind of investment, there ought to be reforms that in certain tenure protections and the way people have to be paid identically, because otherwise you can't do these kind of things in a ways that are economically rational. And Arnold's whole approach to the teacher question was all stick and no carrot, and very predictably got the, you know, 20 million plus in the first few months of this year of union money advertising against him in ways that dragged him down. He never got the right conversation going that would actually be reformist and would engage not just union leaders, because there'll be things he needs to that they'll always oppose, but the real constituencies, teachers, nurses themselves, people who know that there needs to be some change, but that it's not all just stick. Bob, is there any way to recapture the right spirit that's needed, or are we just going to sort of carry on now for, I guess, till the gubernatorial election a year from now?
Well, I think the right spirit won. The voters spoke, and they spoke in a very clear way to say they respect what the public service workers do. After all, these people have been baited. They've been pitted, teachers against students, firemen and policemen against –
That's too cardboard a debate.
Well, you know
– Do you think nothing needs to change in the way we
– I think a lot needs to be changed. I think more money needs to be spent on inner city schools. I think most people in the state would probably say, and in the country would probably say, the schools work out splendidly in more affluent communities, which are supported by extra funding from the community, where you're not dealing with all of the social problems that you have in the ghettos, break up a family, all the things we know about. This is not a subject. It's not a cardboard figure, by the way. There's a vast literature that said we've asked the schools to solve all of the problems that the rest of the society has failed to solve. And so you warehouse kids in there, and you expect teachers to – and now, you know, the tenure thing was interesting, because what's going to attract people to this profession? You know, they could become pundits. These are smart people. They go to college. We don't, as you say, we don't pay enough. We don't have enough incentives. And to make the unions the whipping boy is absurd. And as I say, I think
union behavior is all right in these things is not true.
I'll tell you something. My children, all three, went to the public schools in Orange County. Well, two of them went in Orange County. One went in the north. But when my kids were in the public schools of Orange County, everyone was happy with the schools, okay? And in places like Irvine, California, and so forth, the schools get a great deal of support. What we're talking about here is how do you get teachers to teach kids in Oakland and South Central Los Angeles and rundown areas throughout the state, rural and urban. It's a heroic task. I have a son who's given up his writing career to go back and get his teaching credential, who is today's a holiday, but on Friday, but is teaching in the school system. And I say more power to him, but I look at the salary that's being offered, and he'll never be able to buy a house in the area where he's teaching.
Right.
This is not something more upwardly mobile parents would urge their children to do. And he's certainly going to take a pay cut over any job he's had up to now. But I tell you, this election in California, it was a marvelous demonstration that the voters get it. They know that these public service people are not the enemy. That's why they voted down the thing that they can't use their union funds. That's why they voted down the tuition thing. That's why they said they don't want the legislative districts thrown back to the court so then the lobbyists would have a field day. This was a vote for public sector workers. And if you're really a Democrat, whether you're a centrist or a moderate Republican, you would respect these public workers for what they do day in and day out.
Tony, you want a word here? I want us to get to Corzine for a minute also. But
yeah, just a quick word. And you folks out in California obviously have a better view of it than I do. My sense is that Schwarzenegger's governance has been somewhat desultory, that it's sort of been postures and statements, but that didn't seem just from this distance to be the intense strategic application of all the governor's energy towards accomplishing things, and like the big accomplishment was getting elected, and then it's sort of been somewhat a series of postures since then, and sort of the B team of the old Wilson crowd. I just wonder whether he has been able to parlay his – obviously he hasn't, but whether he could have parlayed his initial popularity more if it had been a more systematic governance.
Up ahead, the trouble with France and the riches of oil. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Scheer is with me on the left. Tony Blankley is in Washington on the right. Just finishing the election wrap-up, I do want us to spend a nanosecond on John Corzine's race. He won for governor of New Jersey, but it got very ugly at the end with everybody pulling out, everybody's ex-wives and settlements. Tony, there was talk about Corzine's ex-wife talked in the press and was used in an ad that he was going to let down New Jersey the way he let down his family, and it all seemed so ugly, and talk of him paying the mortgage of some lobbyist he was dating or something. But I tried to explain to someone who mentioned that to me that for an ex-Goldman Sachs head to be paying somebody's mortgage is, for them, it's kind of like just bringing flowers to a date. That's what a Goldman CEO can do.
But somehow, a Democrat spending $60 or $80 million getting elected in New Jersey strikes me as not a news item. Bob. I mean, what else? What other possible result could you have? It's a Democratic state, and when the incumbent, the senator running for governor, outspends what 7-1, and how can you spend money in New Jersey at that level? It's almost predetermined. Yes, it got ugly at the end on both ways, but I don't think whether it got ugly or not, the outcome was in any serious doubt.
Some people think Corzine has presidential ambitions, Bob. Do you? One thing I always like about figures like Bob Rubin and other Goldman luminary and Corzine is you can't tag them in national politics as being Marxist. No one who ran Goldman is a socialist. So when they talk about universal health care, to me that's a nice new voice on the national stage. Yes? No?
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with enlightened millionaires. I mean, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was one, and Corzine is a principled liberal. And by the way, Bob Rubin, as opposed to some others in the Clinton administration, was opposed to the welfare reform proposal and retained a consistent liberal view. But I would say in this election, what happened was that Democrats had stuck to their guns. And I don't have to agree with everything that Cain believed in. You know, he is a Catholic. He is anti-choice on basis of his religion. But he's also pro-immigrant and against bashing immigrants. He took a strong stand on the death penalty. And he was smashed for it, by the way. A vicious campaign against him on the death penalty and on immigrant
issues. Are we talking about New Jersey?
No, I was saying Cain in Virginia. In New Jersey, I think you're saying he bought the election. My goodness, if that were the case, the Republicans would own California and many other states. I don't think we should disparage the victory of a candidate just because they would get funding. Arnold Schwarzenegger put millions of his own money into this campaign here, and he was blasted. But I do think the lesson is that Democrats need to stand for something, and these guys did.
Let's talk about France. There'll be a lot of time to watch the elections as we head toward 06. But France, riots in the suburbs or cités, lots of talk about this, curfews. Is France out of control? What does it mean, Tony? You're someone who's looking at the clash of civilizations. What's going on there?
Well, yes. I in my book I wrote, which I finished writing in April, came out in September, I anticipated, because I think it was obvious, that there was going to be no-go zones. It was going to be an effort to retake bits and pieces, turning, create little Fallujahs across the continent of Europe. I, in fact, read carefully Thomas Friedman's, the New York Times, excellent foreign columnist, when he spent 2 weeks in Paris specifically studying the attitudes of French Muslim teenagers, Parisian Muslim teenagers. And I quoted him in my book because his conclusion was that they were overwhelmingly admirers of bin Laden, they identify as Muslims first and French last, that they all watch Al Jazeera. So he thought, and many, many other people who have been studying it closely, and I also reached the same conclusion, that radical Islam has taken a deep stride into the mentality of second and third generation Muslims in Europe. That's not to say that poverty isn't an element, but I think poverty creates the opportunity for ideologies to set hold. And I thought, as interesting as the event there was, and since I anticipated it, it didn't surprise me, the coverage of it was, I thought, stunning. I was in Russia last week that it was going on, and I was seeing CNN and international and BBC coverage and vast undercovering of it. Then yesterday it was announced by one of the executives of the top TV, French TV station, that he had instructed his TV network not to photograph the images of cars burning because, as he said, he didn't want to give fodder for right-wing candidates to win the next election. On the other hand, in the Middle East, if you look at Egyptian media, Saudi media, other, you see that it was a sort of wall-to-wall coverage. They were using words like intifada and war. I think that the liberal West is fooling itself by looking at only economic reasons for people to be motivated. In fact, culture and religion, whether correctly or incorrectly understood, is probably the more powerful force right now amongst increasing numbers of Muslim youth in Europe.
Bob?
Yeah, well, I think that this is the legacy of colonialism. The French had this idea that they had a different colonialist model, just as we do. We're spreading democracy. They thought they were spreading Catholicism and, I guess, their variant of French civilization. They did this in Indochina. They did this in North Africa and elsewhere. And the legacy of that is they have a population that basically came to their country as a result of these incursions, this arrogance, this assumption, you know what is best for people. I think we're seeing some of the consequence of that in explosions in Jordan against the hotels that basically foreigners and Americans occupy or stay at. We saw it in the Iraq explosions that don't go away just yesterday. And I think the idea that you can, yes, there are passions, but why put your finger in the middle of the wound and stir it? That's what the U.S. did with Iraq. That's what the French did in going to Algeria in the first place. And this is the legacy. And when they warned us, when the French warned us not to get into this imperial venture, they were speaking out of experience, just as the Germans were speaking out of very real experience because the chickens come home to roost.
It's sort of odd to bring up Iraq regarding the French, since they did all in their power to stop us from going
yes,
in.
Yes, but the reason they did, Tony, is because they learned the lessons of colonialism, and they're paying the price right now for their past colonial ventures.
Oh, you don't think it's a fact that since they refused to fight terrorism in Iraq, they now have to fight it in Paris?
Oh, that's absurd. Well, no, it isn't.
That was
because
a joke.
Because it denies,
that was a joke.
Yeah, but think of the
that
point.
Was a joke,
I understand,
Robert.
Tony, but think of the point you're making. You're saying there's a legacy because you've taken people out of their culture. You've put them into a society where the French want to be French. They basically have a nationalist view, just so the Germans do. You've brought people in on some out of some kind of grand imperial design, and now you're paying the consequences.
But even several generations later, yes. That's what's so interesting, right? Because these are not –
well, but
these
it's,
are not.
It's more than that. It's more than that because the first generation have not been radicalized. And in fact, while, yes, of course, there's a history of colonialism, and that plays a role in a lot of calculations, nonetheless, the new and unique factor is the rise of an effectiveness of radical Islamic propaganda among second and third generation European Muslims. That's new. It's not related to colonialism. It's race, is based on a relatively new ideology that only arose starting in the 40s and 50s as colonialism was over.
But Tony, do you think, and I want to, we're going to have to move on, and obviously we'll be following this, but is the appeal of this, is it not, if there were more economic opportunity for these folks? I mean, you're saying it's not just that, and I'm trying to understand why second and third generation folks are being lured to something that's so violent.
Well, I mean, if you browse through my book, I quote a lot of the material that's being put on the internet in Europe, and I think you'll find at least see what these young people apparently finding appealing, but. We're going to be able to put it to the test because I'm sure that Chirac, being a welfare politician, is going to throw money and programs at the problem. If that works, I hope it does because I don't like the alternative. But my strong suspicion is that this is not a 2-week event, but it's simply a symptom and a benchmark of further violence and the buying them off with welfare benefits or even with jobs. And I would remind you that all of the terrorists in London had middle class jobs, and most of the terrorists who hit us on September 11th, like Mohammed Atta, came from well established, materially comfortable families, and that some other than money, hard as it is for Westerners to imagine, it's something other than money that motivates a lot of peoples for good and for evil.
Big oil. Speaking of big money, big oil was in the news this week with the heads of the major oil companies being summoned to Congress to testify and to hear both parties talking about the extremely high levels of profits they've had because of the spike in oil prices and various calls for windfall profits taxes or using some of the excessive, or so it said, oil profits to fund low-income energy assistance programs, et cetera. Bob, does any of that make sense? Are the oil guys to blame? Thought that'd be a softball to the left side of the softball to the left side of the table.
Oh, come on. I mean, I'll let Tony. It is so shameful. These guys, the main thing is they have such power. They've got a president that is their own camp. They got a vice president that comes out of the same swamp. And, these guys can do whatever they want. And they're without shame. That's the only thing that surprises me. I mean, that they steal. Like they didn't. What happened here in California when we had the energy crisis, which they just exploited and make their money, it's just they're without shame. They think they can get away with anything. And clearly with this administration, and with total Republican control of the Congress, they can.
Tony, isn't this just supply and demand?
Yes, it's supply and demand. Nobody talks about windfall subsidies when gas was at $10, oil was at $10 a barrel. The market, when they tried price controls and windfall profit taxes, we had long lines and shortages. When you have, I think you have to let the marketplace work. In fact, prices are coming down somewhat as the oil companies make more money. They will be putting more money into their field of investment, which is oil research, oil drilling, and delivery, and they'll increase the supply, which will further bring down the cost. And if we interfere as we did in the late 70s, we'll regret it.
The only thing that this brings into focus for me is that in the debate over CEO pay, you always get what I think is the wrong view that this is all about market forces and it's about rewarding people who are the superstars at the top. This thing where you'll see all these folks get incredible performance-related bonuses and equity for what was stuff that's so clearly outside of their control while lots of frontline workers struggle just sort of encapsulates in the most focused symbolic way how much of CEO pay is not related to anything we think of as within people's control and it really not results for performance. I'm going to let us defer Judy Miller till next week because Ariana, who's our chief gossip and Judy Miller watcher, will probably have better gossip when we come back. That means it is time once again for our famed end-of-show Left, Right, and Center rant featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Tony Blankley in Washington, it is your soapbox.
Well, picking up on what you were just saying, I would wish that everybody would not get involved anymore in telling what salaries and compensation in the private sector should be, whether it's rock stars who make $1 zillion or CEOs who make $1 zillion. They're all the representation, the result of market forces and the determination of private parties and should be no business of politicians or voters.
Robert Scheer.
My pet peeve is personal. On Friday, I was fired as a columnist by the publisher of the Los Angeles Times, where I have worked for 30 years. I assume that is because of the many columns I've written exposing the lies used by President Bush to justify the invasion of Iraq. Fortunately, 60% of Americans now get the point, but only after tens of thousands of Americans and Iraqis have been killed and maimed as the carnage spirals out of control. My only regret is that my pen was not sharper and my words tougher.
Let me pick up a point on CEO pay then as a sort of counter rant to Tony's, which is that I think it's important for the level of CEO pay to be a matter of public discussion when we have an era of such dramatically changing inequality or surging inequality with so much at the top that is not related to performance. I am all for entrepreneurs and CEOs making tons of money for delivering for shareholders and for building great enterprises that change our lives. Look at Google. Look at Microsoft. But so much of what happens in the defense of levels of pay here that are much higher than elsewhere is a false assertion that it's market forces. CEOs don't have their pay set by market forces. For people who are working poor, we might want to think of more assistance for them as well because the same rules should apply to them. But that's all the rules we got time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to my co-hosts, Robert Scheer and Tony Blankley. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is Ray Guarna. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
You got pajamas. We know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.